When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com to sign up today.
Hey there, welcome to Nick Pollock and Friends, where I talk to people I know and who you should know. Today we're talking to Ray Murphy of Baseball HQ. Ray, it is an absolute honor to bring back Nick Pollock and Friends with you. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, I am thrilled to be here, Nick. Thanks for bringing it back with me. And I know you and I have talked about doing this for way too long now.
Yeah, so a long time.
Glad to finally connect, right?
Absolutely. And I have one very serious question. I see right now you're sitting down with your headset on as you do this. Are you going to be like Brent, who decided to pace around as he did it, providing me a wonderful experience? Something that, like, I've done a lot of these, and it was a very remarkable one for me. I loved it, and it just kind of showed the comfort that Brent had, which is just saying a lot to me. That's like how people show respect to me, is that their comfortability around me. So I hope that you have some equivalent today.
Sadly, my headset today is tethered. My Bluetooth one is charging. So I think my mobility is rather limited today.
Oh, well, maybe we can make Brent lend you his for the future. But before we begin, I mean, let's just really go over the beginnings of Ray Murphy and where did you grow up? What were your dreams and aspirations when you were a kid?
Geez, I grew up in the suburbs of New York City in Westchester County as a child of the, born in the 70s, sentient in the 80s kind of thing. So, many of my early baseball memories are around New York baseball. I was in a divided Yankees-Mets household, which was entertaining. But now I live in Boston, and I'm a through and through Red Sox fan. So the baseball origin story is mine is both unusual and complicated.
Yeah, I remember you did the blind co-manager draft with us for PitchCon, and your background was Fenway.
Yes,
and yes. I wasn't too thrilled about that personally.
Whatever. You said go off on the tangents and
I'm just kidding around. Interesting.
You stirred the pot, so now you get the payoff, right?
There it is, right?
It's actually a fairly long and complicated story, and I
think that
you're going to feel guilty about digging into a nest of tangents to make you feel guilty. As mentioned, born and raised outside of New York City, father, grandfather, and all were Yankee fans. I was, that's me genetically, right? But my sister and my kid brother were defectors who became Met fans, and in the mid late 80s, being a Met fan was a pretty good thing to be, right? As opposed to a relatively suffering Yankee fan. It's one of the only times in New York baseball history where the Met fans had some things to gloat about over Yankee fans. So I left New York in the early 90s to go to college, and I moved up here to Boston, and for a while I hung on to my New York baseball affiliations. And of course, in any divided New York baseball household, the pinnacle event is the 2000 World Series, right?
Absolutely.
When we get to the Subway Series.
4-1 Yankees. How could I forget?
How could you forget? True story, I was in the ballpark the night at
Shea
Stadium,
right?
Game 5.
Wow.
That was the end of New York baseball for me, as the events that got me into the ballpark that night were closely related to the fact that my kid brother, the Met fan who I needled for years and years and years, had actually passed away earlier in 2000 during that season. And then so that whole Subway Series ended up being sort of the, would have been the pinnacle event in the household, and he wasn't there for it. And I kind of walked out of the stadium that night after seeing the Yankees win the World Series, which I should have been thrilled about, and was kind of instead, of mixed emotions about. And sure. then a year later, when Mariano Rivera gave up the bloop to Luis Gonzalez.
Don't know what you're talking about. Never
in
happened.
Arizona. Yeah, that never happened, right? But a year later, I kind of realized, you know, I didn't really care. And then, you know, that was, I had kind of seen the pinnacle of New York baseball, right? The Subway Series thing I had, like, you know, sort of lived my whole life for, you know, in a baseball perspective. And, you know, on a parallel track to all of this, I am living in Boston. I've married a Boston girl, and she is, you know, reminding me that, you know, you can do what you want, but, you know, your kid's going to be a Red Sox fan, so, you know, you might as well get on board. And I'm like,
yeah,
you make a fairly good point, you know.
Look,
so that's kind of how we got from A to B to C, and, you know, I understand that, you know, that particular change of allegiance is you know, not allowed, just canonically.
No, that's allowed.
That's carved in stone tablet. But I feel like I sort of have a unique enough path there that, you know, when I share it, people are like, all right, well, at least I'm not going to give you shit for that because, you know, you just kind of depressed me. So,
yeah. Man, Ray Murphy, a couple things. First and foremost, I'm really sorry to hear about your brother. I know it's removed, but still that's, you know, that must have been very hard at the time. So I'm really sorry to hear about that.
Thank you.
And second of all, we don't curse on this show, so I'm going to have to bleep that out. third of all, you actually brought up something that I try and talk about a lot on the streams that I do, where I mean, I'm a Yankee fan. I like to, like, sit, cool, I'm a Yankee fan. That's great. But it's funny. I don't really feel like a Yankee fan. And what I mean by that is I want them to win, but I'm not, like, when I was a kid, I knew every single player on the team. I knew every stat, every game, everything. I followed it. I'm a baseball fan now. Yeah. And I've also realized in life, and kind of how I run Pitcher List is, and actually Baseball HQ is very much the same way, of how you guys have your discussions are not in the typical, like, alpha bro way that sports is normally assigned to. And what I've seen is that those that will tell you, like, that will gatekeep, essentially, you know, people trying to say, like, what you can and can't do, who can you root for and stuff, that's a ridiculous idea. You know, you had this really important reason why you are a Red Sox fan, which makes all the sense in the world. Absolutely. That's the right thing for you to do. Do that, you know? And anyone that would give you anything for that, that's just ridiculous. And I'm really happy that you made that switch. And, you know, we allow ourselves to have this, you know, this excuse or this vent of sports to allow us to be more emotionally worse as humans and treat each other poorly. And I don't agree with that whatsoever. So you will not get anything from me, Ray, about that whatsoever.
And you make a lot of good points, Nick, and I appreciate it. And, you know, I share your perspective of baseball fan first. You know, I was sitting here in this, you know, chair in this office this afternoon, and I had the Twins and Mariners game on for several winnings. And,
oh, yeah, right,
know,
yeah.
I might put the Red Sox and Braves on tonight because, you know, that sounds like a good game. But, you know, if I find something more compelling on the streams, I will click over or, you know, put on what captures my fantasy team.
Absolutely.
Or the pitcher I want to see, or... Yeah, I've been often. I'm not the only person in this country who's been watching an awful lot of the Reds every chance I get the last few weeks.
Yeah, right.
I'm searching for fun, and fun can be found in any different ballpark on any given night.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you understand how good these pitchers could be, what they're trying to do, all the beauty of baseball is there. But we all know that. So that's interesting to hear those origins, of course, of you becoming a Red Sox fan. And you're in upstate New York growing up. I'm so sorry. I have to say it once. It is my blood to be able to have to say that. Up in Westchester is not upstate. I understand. But I have to say it once. I apologize. We move on. So you grew up there. What were your aspirations of, say, 10-year-old Ray Murphy?
10-year-old Ray Murphy was like, wanted to throw the best wiffle ball curveball he could.
Wiffle ball specifically.
Specifically, yeah. I'm actually, funny story, I'm actually going to Fenway next week with my former next door neighbor from growing up in New York, who lives in Montana now of all places, and he's flying with his kids, and we're going to a Red Sox game. But we, you know, he's the first one that comes to mind with, you know, playing wiffle ball in the backyard or inventing various home run derby games or whatever. You know, but who has aspirations at 10 beyond, like, you know,
yeah, of course. I mean,
where's my nearest, like, ice cream cone, right?
You know? Sure, absolutely. But okay, fine. So that's like, it's high school for you, or maybe it's college for you. Like, what were you thinking you'd be doing?
Yeah, I was always drawn to math and numbers and data. And I remember my father bringing home a IBM personal computer from work in, like, you know, some stupid early time, like 1983, and like,
oh wow,
was blown, right?
Yeah,
you know, he worked in, you know, computers early on, and, you know, had a computer in the house, you know, years before anybody else. Not that you could connect to the internet or do anything cool like mm-hmm. that, but, you know, I saw a spreadsheet before probably anybody else my age, right? And they just, you know, I locked in on that stuff pretty early, and, you know, took a long time to figure out what I wanted to do with it, but it was always somewhere in the math, computers, tech space. And hey, I found a way to marry that with baseball, which is, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah, there you go. How did you manage to do that? Like, okay, here you're in high school. Where'd you go to college?
I moved up to Massachusetts and went to college at College of the Holy Cross, which is in Worcester, Massachusetts. Center of New England there.
I feel like I played baseball against them. I don't know. There are a lot of...
Very well have.
Yeah, it's possible. Obviously, had a much better field than we did, because everyone did. So were you mathematics or economics?
Yeah, it was math
or
and computer
there?
Science. Yeah.
There you go. Yep. And you minored in that here. Do you have any sort of ridiculous Ray Murphy in college stories for us?
No.
Nothing. You were just like, all right, I'm going to the books. This is a thing.
I was a mediocre at best student who was distracted by, in all honesty, of all the vices you can get into in college, the one that probably cost me more grade points than anything else was video games.
Oh yeah. Which ones?
It was the 90s. So it was, NHL Hockey 93 and 94 and,
sure.
You know, the EA Sports College Football I have fond memories of, and that era of all of the
but it was always sports games for you.
Absolutely sports
all
games
the way through. So like when NFL Blitz hit, you're like, oh my gosh,
100%.
This is something else. Oh yeah, I often make reference to Sub-Zero and Da Bomb. Those are my two favorite NFL Blitz plays by far.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely,
without a doubt. And then you can also just run the QB to the right and over the right.
There was that basketball game where was it double dribble where you could, you know, drain three pointers like, you know, all freaking day long from like one spot on the floor. That was like,
that was a fun one. Yeah, of course, NBA Jam and stuff too.
Yeah, totally, all that stuff. Yeah,
that's great. All right, cool. Now. Yeah, so that was your general advice in college. And yeah, I mean, I was a computer science minor. I understand a little bit. I had to do MIT Scheme. This was a database and structures class that I had to do to get my minor. This was the bane of my existence. This class. And MIT Scheme, imagine a lot of programmers or people who are involved in this, they're listening to this and goes, I have no idea what that is. Right. It's supposed to be made as a tutorial language because you can't like search for answers online. We only have like a printout manual.
Yep.
So I remember actually the moment I knew that I wasn't going to do this, because I thought I was really going to pursue this. I was really into it. I loved like the problem solving of writing code, and I have a lot of things I want to create. I wanted to achieve certain things with it and have like the tools to be able to come, you know, make those come to fruition. Sounds so great. So I took this class and I did MIT Scheme, and I had one homework assignment where I knew the way that they wanted me to do it was with some recursion and all this kind of stuff. And I realized though, I can make a much simpler program with fewer lines of code if I was able to do a not. As long as it's not this, then it do this, right? But I couldn't find in the manual where the not was. Like, I just did not know, and I couldn't look this up. I couldn't do it. I spent 8 hours skimming through this until I eventually found one example that had a symbol I didn't know, which was the not bang. So it was just an exclamation point. That's all I needed to do. And I was like, I can't live like this.
This is not for me.
Hey, yeah.
You know, a huge part of what college is not always figuring out what you want to do with the rest of your life, but, you know, ruling a couple of things out, right?
Oh my gosh. So that was my life in computer science. I mean, like it taught me a lot of like, I knew CSS and HTML, wasn't intimidated by it. I knew kind of like the grammar of generic computer programming, not necessarily the phrase for each language, but it's all generally similar. Classes and objects and everything like that, and brackets and closing them, and, you know, just the general rules of it. And that allowed me to make WordPress websites and stuff moving forward. But so I'm not intimidated by code. It's just, couldn't do it. I applaud you. for doing this any degree.
You're giving me more credit. I think my skill set is actually quite similar to the level you're describing right now.
Okay. All right. Well, so then here you are. You're in college, and here you are now, one of the major players at Baseball HQ. What happens next from college?
Yeah. So, you know, at college, I, you know, started out in the computer industry for a few years, and then somewhere around, I've got a plaque on my desk here that I can, you know, reference for dates here that Ron Chandler actually gave out on one anniversary or another. But it says at the bottom of it, Baseball HQ, Ray Murphy, since 1999. So
I got
to college in 94, and it was by 99 that I had hooked up with Ron at Baseball HQ. And I know that I tried earlier than that because he rejected my application the first time. So
when was that?
It took until the second time before he actually thought I actually could hack it. So
sure.
And I was a subscriber before that. So I found HQ, working backwards, probably by 97 or something like that. I was a subscriber. I tried to apply. I got rejected. I tried to apply again. Finally, he let me write for the site. And that was, that was 1999. And I started out as the, I was hired as the writer to write about internet leagues because it was such a foreign concept that you would play against, 11 strangers online rather than like your 11 buddies from college or whatever, whatever the different strategies or experiences would be along with that. I had played in, ESPN leagues or whatever before that. And so therefore that was going to be my niche for Ron.
Sure.
It just grew from there. So into now Brent and I, run the site.
That's so amazing. And those 5 years, though, like here you're fresh out of college. Like, what was your first job?
My technical day job background is in software quality assurance. So I was testing computer software. Mm-hmm. Getting back to your point about coding, I was
QA stuff.
Yeah, I was not the coder. I was the skim the code and test it and try to figure out ways to break it and figure out where the where the gaps were or mm-hmm. how you could actually get it to do something you didn't want it to do. So that was kind of where my background was, where my first jobs were and, my career.
But then,
shifted 20 degrees in one direction or another since then, but, still in the, technology, but not actually writing code all day.
Right. So, so 94, you graduate college and you get a job doing this kind of QA stuff as you're talking about. Then while doing that, you're involved in fantasy baseball. You come across Baseball HQ. You send not one, but two applications to Ron Chandler. And by the second one, he brings you in to write about just kind of what it's like to play on the internet these days. You must look back at yourself that when you started Baseball HQ, or I started at it, and where you are now doing this. What are the major shifts in maybe just philosophy of working there that you've seen from yourself?
It's interesting because a fair amount of the people still that I work with at HQ now were there before me or right after me. We've certainly grown to staff and it's shifted over time, but there are a fair amount of people who have 15, 20, 20 plus years on the staff. So do we work exactly the same way we used to? No, not at all. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of I sort of know there's a rhythm, an unspoken language to a lot of it. You know that someone's going to pop up in the third week of February every year and be ready to, contribute his five articles until the start of the season. And they're highly anticipated articles. So you want to be sure they're coming, but they always do because the guy's been doing it since the beginning of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's some stuff that works all the time and, is, well received, but then there's also the challenge of, moving the ball forward and keeping it new and fresh. And sometimes that is new people with new ideas. And sometimes mm-hmm. I'm always amazed by, I feel like I'm not the most creative person around, but I'm amazed by how many people who have been doing the same thing for a long time can come up with that new spin on it or the new metric or the new, how did I never think to combine these two things before into a list of, the list of combining, I'll use Patrick Davitt off the top of my head. you know, combining hard hit rates and contact rates and, you know, coming up with a whole new metric about that. I'm like, that's just brilliant PD. How did we ever think of this before? This was, you know, a few years ago at this point. But, you know, stuff like that just falls out of the sky from, you know, as likely to come from an old voice as a new, and as it is a new voice. And I think that's incredibly cool. I can't sit here and say that's happening because I personally am doing anything right, but I feel like, you know, whatever we're doing, we're somehow fostering an environment where that stuff happens, and I deeply appreciate it. So my overall ethos is to like not break what's working.
Absolutely. I mean, one thing that's certainly not breaking, and you're doing such a great job with, is First Pitch Arizona, which, I mean, it's how I know Ray Murphy and Brent, and really how I got to know you guys personally. It is the best. I've already had my flight booked for November. I believe it's November 2nd through November 5th this year. Is that right?
November 2nd through 5th. Yes, indeed. You are actually.
Oh, I got it. I'm the best one for you.
Because I don't have my flight booked, but that's.
You gotta get on that.
That's on my post-it note on my desk. I know what flight I'm taking. I've looked at them. I just have not booked, so I need to get on that.
But yeah, it was an event I went to 2019 for the first time, and I cannot express how it's just the highlight of the year. Essentially, if you're in the fantasy baseball community at all, if you want to meet anyone inside of it, we all go there. It's our way of just seeing everybody and having the best time for a weekend. Everybody is so accessible and just wants to talk about the same thing that you want to talk about. And Ray and Brent do such a great job organizing it all. It's really just a pure joy. I mean, anything else you want to really talk about with Arizona?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate the kind words, and it is very much in line with what we were just talking about, where Brent and I got sort of handed this creation from Rick Wilton and Ron Chandler that dates back to, you know, roughly the same time frame we're talking about. I think the origin story of First Pitch Arizona is in 1994, Rick and Ron wanted to find an excuse to go out to the Arizona Fall League to watch some goddamn Michael Jordan play out there, right? And they had like 13 speakers and 5 paid attendees or something like that. But it's it obviously took hold from there. And I really do feel like it's, you know, basically a trust that has been handed to us to foster, because, you know, it already had this ethos that you're talking about of all of these voices from this industry come and are collaborative, not competitive, and share their best work and build on each other's ideas. And that was already baked in. And that is so much a part of what makes it the unique and incredibly enjoyable event that it is. And again, my ethos there is kind of, you know, make sure that stays in place. And in terms of, you know, building out the program every year and trying to, you know, give there are so many incredible voices in this community now, and trying to give as many of them a space to contribute and show their work as we can. And you do that, and then the attendees just follow, because clearly the word gets out. We're, you know, obviously had a couple of bumpy years with COVID times. You know, we didn't do it in 2020, and then 2021 was sort of a tentative step back. You know, we got there, but it was it was a little bit scaled back. Last year was kind of the first year we were sort of full bore, and this year I think we're on, you know, it's early yet, but we're on pace for a really robust registration. And we do have a deadline coming up. Our best price, best current price of $379 for the weekend is good through the end of this month, which is the 31st, which is what, next Tuesday? So next Monday, I guess. Tuesday's the trade deadline. I got to keep those separate. So before the trade deadline, make sure you register for Arizona. But no, it's Brent and I are getting pretty deep into planning the weekend sessions right now, and there are just so many good ideas coming into our inbox from, you know, people like yourself who are like, hey, I would love to come and talk about this.
I'll just talk anything about starting pitching, just get me on there.
Totally.
I will shout it from the desks otherwise. Like, no, Alex Reyes, get out of here.
Alex Absolutely Reyes will come not. Up sometime during the weekend, I'm sure.
But no, I really cannot emphasize it enough. If you're on the fence about it, just do it and you'll never regret it. I think for me, just inside the industry, transformed me, and you guys gave me an opportunity to be on a stage in front of all those people, which was such a great thing. So I can't thank you guys enough for that.
Hey, thank you. You killed it. That's
well,
we knew you would, but
it's kind of you to say that, but I say it often, like me doing a presentation with Enosaurus about pitch modeling. Are you joking? That was something that blew my mind beyond belief. And it's just such a fun time, guys. We are up late as well. There's all this stuff that goes on. It's awesome. You'll see Justin Mason in his swimsuit. Okay. Just come. It's a great time. It's the best. I just can't thank again, Rent and Barry. Oh my gosh. Brent and Ray for making me a part of it. And, just continually making such a great event. So sign up today. Where can they sign up, for the event?
Yeah, just head over to baseballhq.com, right on the homepage there, over on the right side, a little bit down the page, is a big old orange and red logo for First Pitch Arizona with, you know, full of desert colors and everything. Just click on the logo and that'll get you to the sign up page. Again, we got a registration price deadline of July 31st to get the best price. If you can't decide until after July 31st, since that's just a few days away, we will still have registration open. It's just that the price goes up every couple of weeks as we try to lock in our numbers as early as we can. So if you need to debate or negotiate at home or whatever it is, you've got time to do that if July 31st doesn't work. But if you want to save $50 or so, July 31st is your deadline.
There we go. Awesome. So we have a lot more to talk about with Ray, about his suggestions for everybody entering the business and what, you know, maybe some stories about the most difficult times at Baseball HQ and how he found solutions to fix it, among other things about Ray, like maybe your favorite movie, music, your mantras, all that stuff. We're going to talk about all of that after this break.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right, we're back. So Ray Murphy here, and Ray, I got to ask, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time with Baseball HQ, and I'm sure you've seen a lot when it comes to just changes of how the site is structured, the things that you guys do, and I'm sure there have been lots of moments that have been very difficult in some fashion that you were able to find a way through, because you guys are doing great right now, but as with all these things, there are a lot of ups and downs, and many times it's two steps forward, one step back. What comes to mind as like one of the more difficult things and how you guys got through that? Say for COVID. COVID's the easy one.
COVID's the easy one, right?
All right.
Mentally, though, I'm not sure. You know, we can work in reverse chronological order, right?
Yeah.
COVID was tough, but, you know, maybe I had a little better perspective on that from the global calamity perspective.
Sure, yeah.
You know, of it, that, but the lockout last year, I actually took harder. Like, I was just...
Yeah.
Utterly outraged by that.
Me
like,
too.
You know that these guys are, you know, because it was such a self-inflicted wound compared to the pandemic, right? They mm-hmm. could shut down the entire offseason and jeopardize, you know, we're the guppies around the shark of MLB, right?
Just yeah,
you know,
right,
picking
right.
off our little scraps, and it, like they could, you know, do that kind of thing to us. Just, you know, my mood was just
yeah. It was here was someone else in charge. Days. You know, we felt so out of control of it. And like,
yeah.
we're trying to do this amazing thing. And this stupidity yeah. is ruining all like, of us. And
they're not going to torpedo the whole season, right? They're not going to torpedo the whole season.
It was
right?
so bad. To be positive here, how great has it been? 2023 has been a normal season. I actually saw on Google Trends, the search terms of fantasy baseball, which I assumed were just going to be a downward trend forever, are actually above 2019 now.
Are they really? That's awesome.
Yes. And that shocked me. I thought it would be actually the reverse of like kind of declining, declining, declining. coming way back in that way. And it's about dang time that we got a full season. Hopefully you guys are seeing something like that.
Full season helps for sure. And, you know, you read all this, you know, I hadn't checked the Google trends like you're saying, but you start to see all these other numbers about ratings being up and you know, how much the, you know, pace of play changes seem to actually be having the desired effect with the casual fan. I mean, you know, it's a, you know, going back to the frustration with from the lockout, it's about time that the game actually did something to help us out, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Throw us a bone for crying.
Imagine me here, who's like, oh, 2019, I'm finally like getting my big bump up to actually being something, and then here's COVID. Here's delay in 2021. Here's lockout. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, so, I totally get it. And I, you know, more than I don't even want to sit here and say I can relate to that, because, you know, it's a little bit different operating a, you know, an established 30-year-old business with a customer base that had basically, you know, it, the plus side for us was that, you know, when the world shut down, we were 90%+ through our sales cycle, right?
I mean, oh, that's interesting,
about,
right?
Because we were worried about having to give out like refunds and that kind of
stuff.
Yeah,
right. But everyone, I'm sure, was free 1 year extensions, right?
But you know, the money was in the bank already. So
I get
it
that.
Was a little less of a you know startup sweat like you were having.
Sure. Right? Yeah, I mean, right, because you are more of Baseball HQ is a subscriber focused site, right?
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I was actually very fortunate. I launched PL Plus in February of that year. So we actually did have some already, and that actually helped us survive 2020 and make it okay. But otherwise, yeah, it was ad traffic at the time. And that was like, that was something else. But that's another, I digress. I'm thinking more of just kind of like problems that you wouldn't really expect from the outside that people would really think would be going on.
I've got a good one for you, actually. I couldn't tell you how long ago it was now. It has to be 10 years or so ago. Think about the process of producing the Baseball Forecaster. And, you know, we go and, you know, it's an incredible sprint over the course of 6 or 8 weeks in the fall where we, you know, literally the day after the season ends, we burp out, you know, for those who have seen them already, the player pages from Baseball HQ, where there's like, you know, 7 guys a page, 100 pages or so of players. We burp out the stats. We write the commentaries over the course of those 6 or 8 weeks. And then we refine the projections, right? So you can imagine a process where the site burps out all of those pages and we spool them out to the writers. And we use, you know, this is 10 years ago, but we were already using, you know, some file sharing program. It was Dropbox or Google Drive or something like that, right? And we put all the pages out there and, you know, the writers, you know, not totally willy-nilly, but kind of willy-nilly, all working in different places at different times. And somebody on the staff accessed the drive with a malware-infected computer.
Oh.
And the Russian spyware came in and, you know, they're like, we want 3 Bitcoin to unlock your files. And I'm like, oh my God.
Okay. So hold on a second. Hold on. So you got ransomware.
Yeah.
What they did, let me, I know exactly what happened. They deleted all of it, right? They didn't actually have it. You didn't pay them.
We didn't pay them.
Right.
But we were able to undo it with no damage, but you know.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Because it was actually on, you know, Dropbox or Google Drive or whatever it was, like
in
version control, we were able to revert the versions on all the files and get back last file.
What a terror that would have been, though, right?
But it was, you know, it was 12 hours of, you know, absolute terror. I don't know if we're even going to have a book. You know, we'll never get this back.
Well,
you know, night I did not sleep until, you know, we realized that,
you know,
4 a.m. we could actually just, you just change version 10 to version 9 and then, you know, it's unlocked. You're fine. Just copy it over to a new file and you're good. But it was, you know, 10 years later, I still carry the terror of those 12 hours or so.
You know, Ray, I had a very similar experience. I don't know if you know this, or I bet you weren't even aware of pitcher gifts or pitcher list back in like 2016. But in that year, 2016, I essentially launched pitcher gifts in 2014, 2015. It became pitcher list when after MLB shut us down in 2014. And then that offseason, I actually, through my other job, I found someone who was like, you know, savvy and everything like that, and like could develop websites and stuff. And I told him what I did, and he was really involved in it. He's like, "Oh man, I would love to build you something different and like better so you can do all this stuff. I'm like, really? Like, that'd be amazing. And he goes, yeah, no, this sounds like such a fun project. Let me do this. Starts doing it. It's, and he does it like 30% of the way. So it doesn't, like the entire 2016 season, it's just really bad and it's worse and everything like that. Front end looks fine, but in the back end has all these missing WordPress features that I need. But the thing is, he built it on an independent database called MongoDB.
Yep.
Instead of, and with Laravel PHP is what he did. And so here I am. I'm literally getting on the flight to Vienna from Brussels. And I just load up the picture list page. And I see that the site is down. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. But then I see that it is showcasing my admin login.
Oh, God.
Like on the you know Gateway Not Found page. It's just like all this random code. But then it shows like my login. And I go, what? Like, I'm like, and I'm getting on the flight and I'm like messaging him being like, what's going on? I got, you know, fix this now. And I'm like, entire flight. Freaking out about this. I land. Yeah. I finally see my sister for the first time in years. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I got to focus on this. My whole thing. Apparently, there was in MongoDB, they figured out what the default admin password was.
Yep.
And they were able to access that through sites. So there was this whole wave of people doing ransomware. Yep. They would go in, delete the entire database, but then just put in a text file saying, like, give me this Bitcoin and I'll give it back to you. And I was like, dude, I don't have money. I have no money. I'm not that site. And the guy literally responded back and said, oh man, I'm so sorry. I had no idea. No, I deleted it. You know, I was just like, dude. So
what was he going to do if you paid him?
Yeah. I know. Or he would just take it and leave. This is part of the reason why my whole philosophy is do not negotiate with terrorists. And if you want to blame the person not negotiating with them, don't be angry at me. Be angry at the terrorists. But luckily one of our database engineers now, Brandon, had come in to help out in August of 2015, and he had downloaded a local version of the site.
Oh, okay.
So he restored a decent amount. There were like 3 months of articles or something that was not there, but man, I know about malware, baby.
Yep.
I know about getting hacked. It is the worst feeling.
It's terrible. It was really indescribable.
And the good feeling, at least for me, it would have been worse for you with the forecast was so much kind of on the line with that. For me, I could have been like, all right, I'll just restart it. Like, it's not that big of a deal. As long as the site and the new daily articles are there, then it's okay. You know, like, I didn't really need the season articles of 2015 to feel like the site was good or bad. I mean, I'd be more upset now because there's just so much more involved. But back then, I was like, okay, this is not the worst thing ever. But it still just blew my mind.
And felt like it at the time. And yeah, there are some bad people out there.
Yeah. And I felt bad really for the other writers who had already written stuff. I'm like, I want them to be able to do their thing, you know? So man, that is a good one, Ray. I'm glad that you didn't have the Russian malware attack affect you. Did you tell the writer, but like, hey man, you attached malware to this? Like,
oh, he felt so bad.
Oh my gosh.
And I gave him crap about it for years. He's, he actually passed away a few years ago. So
I'm so sorry.
But we're having a little death thing here. But yeah, it was Rob Carroll, who was a writer of ours for a long time.
Yeah.
And just the nicest guy.
Just a
wonderful human being, and like, you know, carried that guilt for a long time, even though I assured him that, you know, 12 hours later we were fine and there was no harm done. He was just heartbroken about it.
Sure. Oh man. And Ray, I mean, you've been there, I guess, now for almost 25 years. And
it's going on that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what would you say? I mean, when you think of like all the things you've accomplished with it, obviously, you know, you can say now, like what you've done over the past 25 years is the biggest accomplishment. You can probably say stuff about how you've run First Pitch Arizona, but is there really just kind of one project that you worked on, one article that you wrote, one thing that you helped Baseball HQ get to that would you say you're proudest of over the years?
I mean, it's got to be the forecaster, right? Just it was such a, you know, an honor when I was here when Ron Chandler back in, I'm looking at my bookshelf trying to figure out what year it was. It was probably around 2003 or four when he decided.
You're looking at all the forecasters. Right?
I literally am. Yeah, of course, literally over my head.
Absolutely.
But it was probably around 2003 or four where up until then, the book was literally a one-man production. Like Ron did it, like every word, the entire
book.
That's
unbelievable.
Where he, 2003 or four, where he actually finally broke down and asked for help. right?
Yeah.
And brought in a couple of writers to, you know, farm out some pages and, like, you know, as he probably put it at the time, provide some fresh innings out of the bullpen, right?
Sure.
But he was just trash in, like, yeah, mid-October trying to get through this. But to watch that go through, you know, to get my hands on a couple of pages and be like, oh, I get to, like, you know, actually, like, you know, drop these words into the forecaster to now have, I now in the workflow have like the next to last edit before Ron on the entire projection set, all the player commentaries and everything. And I'm like, every year it's, don't get me wrong, it's an incredible amount of work and a 6 week beat grinder, but it's also, I can tell I'm still, you know, I still have more in me and I'm still passionate about it because, like,
yeah,
I still get excited about it every year. It is absolutely just such a, you know, it's a ton of work, but it's such a cool experience too. And I still literally get butterflies every October when I'm doing that.
That's really cool. I love that answer. And yeah, you should be really proud of that. That's such a staple. Every year I get, I always feel a little spoiled now that I get one, you know, in the mail for First Pitch Arizona.
Another perk of coming to Arizona, yeah, is
there it is. I get my 2024
books are included in your registration price.
Yeah. And, the best overlooked thing I think is kind of the opening articles are great. Really good stuff. Just kind of outline all the different stats and all the little strategies about the year and stuff. Really, really valuable.
There's going to be a lot of meat on that bone this year. I'm sure we'll cover it in the forecaster. I'm sure we'll cover it in Arizona, but, you know, we're going to, you know, I think, you know, we spent all of last off season kind of speculating about what the effects of the new rules were going to be. And mm-hmm. now, you know, I think it's easy to say we have the answers, but we don't have the answers, right? We have the year one answers, and
sure, yeah,
figuring out, you know, how year two is going to be different than year one, I think is in many ways a more, going to be a more interesting conversation, because we were a little bit, you know, just guessing in the wind last year. And now we're actually going to have some data to work with and figure yep. out, you know, someone's going to figure out, we haven't had the chance yet. Or
it's always Derek Hardy. Derek Hardy's the answer. Who's going to figure it out? It's going to be Derek Hardy.
but someone's going to figure out, like, were pitcher injuries actually affected by the pitch clock, right? You know, there's
I don't think so.
Anecdata about that now, but
I'm going to say no.
Come November, someone's going to actually do the definitive study on
right.
that. I can't
wait to see it. I've been hearing a lot of that kind of stuff about certain pitchers. I'm like, oh, I think the pitch clock's getting to him or something. I'm like, how do you? No, I can't. I personally can't really assign that as all the millions of variables of, like, why players are better or worse. But that's just me. I'm sure I'm looking forward to all those articles actually telling me from the raw data of what I should be.
I'm sensing a heated Arizona panel right now.
We'll see. You're actually reminding me of how heated I feel reading some of these pitching blurbs. I just cannot agree with them inside of the forecaster, Ray. Nah, I'm just messing around.
Hey, you keep threatening like that, you're going to end up getting a couple of pages in your
Yeah, right? Like, fine. You know.
Here, I'll do it myself.
Yeah, I'll just do it. Whatever. I'll make my own forecaster. No. I got to say, some of the fun times really are like the panel. I remember a distinct one. I think it was First Pitch Florida in 2021. If you guys did that, maybe you didn't do it there. Maybe it was, I think this is right though. Maybe it was 2022 actually, First Pitch Florida. I think that's, you guys did that. And I think I was there. And I remember being on one about streaming pitchers with Derek Carty. I had given the previous year a presentation about, like, my art of streaming pitchers, which was, that was back in like 2020, which is just about, like, what the process is, how I go about it. And I'm very much about, like, I am so different than your standard analyst of, like, yeah, the numbers of, like, the starts and stuff. I'm like, no. I need to craft a puzzle and a narrative, really, like a story of, like, how they do the things that they do. It's weird. I like being weird.
Oh, yeah. That you can't. Narrative-based arguments are not going to go well with Cardi, though.
Yeah. Well, no. So that's the thing, though. It was a really fun conversation, and we agreed with so much about, you know, pitch quality kind of stuff, too, and opponents and stuff. And I was pretty much just like, are they good? Are they, like, in rhythm and stuff and everything? And then great. How's the opponent? And the opponent's this. And that's pretty much, like, that's how you stream them, guys. That's it. And then I stopped and I said, I have this huge thing against home road splits. I think home run splits are stupid because it's just like random grouping. It's oftentimes when you look at first half versus second half, again, yeah, random grouping, you get 10 things and you put them into two groups. Very often is it exactly 5 and 5. It's sometimes like, different, you know, it's just never going to be like as easy as a 4.5 ERA right here and a 4.5 ERA right over here. It's usually not. So Cardi, I said this to Cardi. I was like, home road splits are dumb, though. I know you're going to disagree with this, but I think home road splits are dumb. And he goes, no, I agree too. And I go, what?
I'm
he
right.
goes, well, yeah, park factors are what matter. Home road splits are dumb. And I literally, we're in front of a panel of like, I don't know, like 40 people or something like that. And I stop it and I say, I'm sorry, everyone. Derek, can you do me a favor? Can you go on Twitter right now and tweet out home road splits are dumb? And he did it. I think this is actually 2021 First Pitch Arizona. And he did it right then. And it was made me so happy.
That's awesome.
It was like, I think that might be like my favorite panel moment that I had. Because then he got all these tweets. It was actually during football season. So this is why it was Arizona.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And I got all these tweets. He got all these tweets. But like, what? Like, the home football crowd is amazing.
Derek's like, what did you make me do?
Yeah, right. It was, I loved it so much. Oh man, those are great times. You guys got to come to First Pitch Arizona. I do want to talk less about specifically HQ. I want to talk more about Ray Murphy, your actual interest outside of baseball and what you do. We're going to talk about all of those things after this break. All right, we're back with Ray Murphy, Baseball HQ. Of course, you know, they're listening to this podcast. This is not a radio show. Anyway, Ray Murphy, we're going to talk about your personal hobbies, stuff like that. So very basics here. What kind of music do you listen to?
Depends what I'm doing. I bounce around between, your classic white baseball writer of a certain age being a Springsteen fan, right?
Oh, I see.
You know, so there's, you know, there's the cliche part of it, right? When I'm writing the forecaster, is I usually get immersed in 80s hard rock, you know, there's a lot of Def Leppard and
A lot of like the hair metal stuff.
Yeah, a lot of 80s and 90s hair metal when I'm banging out the forecast.
Van Halen.
All night.
Yeah, yep, all the time.
Absolutely.
That is so good.
And that'll translate more recently into, you know, if I, you know, let the catalog, you know, drift toward the more modern, you get some Killers and stuff in there.
Sure. Do you do extreme at all?
Yeah, a little. Yeah,
oh man, you gotta listen to Porno Graffiti is just insane. Yep. Their latest two albums, also Sausages of Rock. Oh, that's like Nuno Bettencourt.
And then there's but then it's summer now, so I had a college roommate who was a giant Jimmy Buffett fan, which got into comes out a couple times a year. So
sure,
I'm sort of in season for that right now.
Absolutely. And do you play it all?
Oh God, no. not a musical, you know, cell in my body.
God, no. Why would you ever suggest that, Nick?
Do you know me at all? No, it's actually a funny story.
I'm trying to learn you, Ray.
We haven't talked about my kids. I have twin 11-year-old daughters, and one of them got exposed to the drums in school and started taking some drum lessons, and starts working me over. It's still working me over this summer about wanting to get a drum set.
You got to do it. You can get an electric one.
So here's, I've had this conversation with her teacher, but the takeaway moment I had was, you know, I took her to her lesson, and usually I just sit out in the car and fool around on my phone for half an hour, right? And when she's working me over by the drum set, she tells me I should come in and talk to the teacher. So one day with 5 minutes left in the lesson, I'm walking inside and I can hear her as I'm outside. I'm like, damn it, she's good.
Yeah. Oh, like, you got to do it. That's such a good thing.
I'm like, one, where did that come from? Because it's not come from either me or my wife. But part two is like, all right, I'm probably going to have to do it at some point.
The way I see
I hear talent because I know I don't have it. I don't recognize it in others.
I'm very much about, especially kids, like young kids, if they get themselves into anything that is like skill oriented, in any way, like embrace that. That is a rare thing. A lot of I see it a lot, especially as like a coach, kids just like don't have any passion, and they don't have like the thing that they want to really be doing.
Yeah,
and
if they latch onto it, it doesn't that feel like actually, work. Then 100%.
Right. Yep. And they want to actually like craft it, and they really want to get into it and be detail oriented, and really have that expression of them is like, oh man. So yeah, you heard that she was good and wasn't just like some phase or something.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, actually that. And you're like, all right, so what is wrong with
me? I'm going to have to change it. I'm going to have to stop saying no reflexively.
Yeah, right. How old is she?
I haven't said yes yet, but I've stopped saying no reflexively. That's progress, right?
Yeah. How old is she?
11.
Oh man, get it going. I'm excited for I'll send some albums you can listen to, okay?
Excellent.
There's some I know some great drummers.
I was talking about this with bringing it full circle. I was talking about this with Brent because Brent is a drummer. I didn't know until I was
I didn't get that on out of his podcast. Oh man. Brent, you did me a disservice, Brent. Okay. That's on me.
You gotta ask the right questions, man.
I know, you never know. Now did they go through a recorder phase?
Yeah, there was actually they avoided the recorder phase. They got they both had violin.
Oh, violin. Oh, that's much more intense. I mean, it's usually a recorder because it's the cheapest way to teach like the basics of
here's a piece of plastic, melody. Play some music with it.
Right. But then what happens is that the parents suffer.
Yes.
Because it's just like the most ridiculous things that you have to hear around the house now. As they practice, as I do.
It's actually a fascinating study in like the drug trade that like the kids' school district does. Like I think it was in second grade, they gave them like free violin rentals and lessons for the year. It was the classic drug dealer, like, here, the first one's free. So like everybody did it, right?
Yeah.
And you know, there was some ungodly noises made out of violins in that year, right? And my one daughter who, you know, has some musical inclination stuck with it for a few years and now is transitioning to the drums. So God help me. Electric, like you said. Once I was told that you could do it with headphones, I was like, okay, now we're talking.
All right. So moving away from music now, you know, outside of baseball and everything like that, what would you say you are the biggest nerd about these days? Like the biggest thing that you like, you're so passionate about, you want to get off of your chest. You know, I had Derek Van Riper on here and he was just like, I cannot stand that people just lean so far back in their seats. It drives me insane. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. Like I actually don't lean back in my seat. I don't feel like I need to do it. I feel like it makes a better experience for everybody. Also, it's better posture, everything. It doesn't do much. But is there something like that for you where you're just like, society, please get it together. You need to know this.
Is there? I don't know. My passions are pretty limited to, you know, outside of baseball and 12U girls softball. There's, you know, I don't get a lot of time anymore. So
yeah, well, that's fair. I mean, are you able to play any video games anymore, or is that just a college thing?
You know, it's funny. I actually just this might become a passion for me. I actually just a week or two ago I picked up an Oculus.
Oh, is that right?
And the Oculus golf game is like
which one?
Life Golf Plus. It is life changing. Like, I'm like a lost, you know, somewhere in my past golfer. I used to golf not well, but often.
Sure.
And, you know, that's one of the things that fell off the side of the boat when I had twin babies. And I haven't really gotten back to it. But I picked up the Oculus and, like, the golf is unbelievably realistic. And I'm like,
oh, man,
this might actually be the end of me.
it's so funny. I think golf, like someone says, hey, do you like golf? Do you play golf? And you go, no, I like to be happy. And
yes.
The idea that now you can be unhappy inside your own home just sounds so great. No, it's I'm happy that you have found that with Oculus. I'm actually really curious about all that stuff. I've always thought to myself, like, I need to get one of them. I used to be so into video games, especially when I was a kid. It was, for me, actually, I think about the way that it was very important for me to have the ability to problem solve constantly. And actually I think trained me a lot in the way that I want to think, that I think is so overlooked when you think about kids playing video games. It just presents challenges and simulation in a way that other things just don't, which is great. Now there can be addictive sides to it and everything. Of course you need to manage
pros
it,
and cons, sure. But the pros get
under. There are right. Those things actually really helped me. And so these days, I don't really play it that much. I only play like the best things. And I find this actually a lot is one of my mantras is everything in moderation, where there's so much good stuff in the world now. Like, it is really remarkable how just even like 50 years ago, the amount of ways to entertain yourself were so limited.
Yeah, like you had a television 2, 4, and 7 box. And books, right?
Yeah. And like you had a box that was like, yeah, those TV channels, right? And that's it. Whatever those were, that's all you had. So you were forced to enjoy. It's actually why I think that baseball has had its ups and downs, because you were forced to watch baseball when you were younger.
Yep.
Everyone, that's what you had. And now there's just like endless other things that it's not all of a sudden in tune with the American home, right? So with video games specifically, there's like thousands of games every year. And I just take like one here and there and stuff. And I haven't done VR because there's just so many other things to do. And I would be consumed by it. My gosh.
I'm teetering on the brink of that. I'm literally in week three, but I'm like, you know, it's literally at the point where I'm, you know, kind of structuring my day to make sure I have some time blocked out to get onto it. And I'm like,
we're going to have the best time in retirement homes, Ray.
Yeah,
it's
going to
be so great.
Like, it's awesome.
It's like, it's so funny. I understand right now, like there's a lot of negativity about them because it kind of feels like, oh, you know, you're being abandoned almost and that kind of thing, which I totally get. And you have to have the conversation with everybody that does it. But I'm just kind of like, no, I can't wait to just like hang out with friends. Like I'm older and be in that place and just play all this stuff and be taken care of. Like, that sounds great.
Bringing it back to the fantasy baseball world. Like there's actually a running joke in one of my leagues. I'm in a Scorchy league.
You'll play it in your retirement home.
And we're like, we all like, this league is like as low stress as you can get. It's like barely keeping the lights on. Like we managed to cobble together a draft and like we do like the bare minimum all year long, but it's a way for us to keep in touch. Right. But we're all kind of saying the same thing. Like when we retire, this league is getting so damn cutthroat again, you know, once overwork and kids and all that stuff. And, you know, and it becomes like the outlet it was like when we were all in our early 20s and trash talking and all that. In our 70s, it's going to be just like that again.
Right. Absolutely. Is there like a special event for your draft for that league?
It every couple of years, you know, it's happened a couple of times, but we can't get it together every year. So it's every now and then we do actually get an event together, but it's an irregular occurrence.
Nice. Yeah. I have this vision of this bar where we have a venue that we would actually have like private fantasy drafts that we would announce for people. Like live as it's happening in front of us. And like we would get like the league history and everything. We would have like the bullet points of like certain trends of people. Like this guy has to get Javi Baez every year, you know?
Like you're whatever the gym, like these guys are having their draft, but you're like gym dance.
Like literally in like our venue where like it would be like our studio.
Nice.
And we would be have cameras on. We would live stream it. You know, they would be there like on TV essentially. And we would be in suits, be like, all right, and welcome today to the, you know.
Totally.
Like I did this as a PitchCon prize 2 years ago. Alex and I did a fantasy draft, which was super fun. It was just like it was happening live and we were just live streaming it. It was ridiculous. And they were having a blast because they could see how we would react to every single pick. You know? And it's that kind of content and stuff. Like that just sounds so fun. And to bring in leagues like yours, be like, all right, guys, like come on down and we'll cover yours, you know. That just sounds super, super great. But we're running out of time, and Ray, this has been an absolute pleasure to get to know you a little bit more, to know that you don't play the drums and that Brent does. It's just really amazing. I have one question I ask everybody, and that is, what mantra would you say that you live by?
I think the closest thing I have to a mantra is, it's not a problem until it's a problem.
Mm.
I see, you know, to translate that into English, obviously you could do it yourself, but to me I just see so many people worrying about things that haven't happened yet, in any aspect of their life, and I'm like, you know what, yeah, that looks really bad, but you know, if it actually happens, I'll deal with it when it does, right? And sure, there's probably, you know what, tying that to your motto of all your mantra of all things in moderation, you could probably take mine too far and, you know, end up going through life reactively and not being prepared for anything that's around a corner or over the horizon, right? But my sort of default sense is that people spend too much time worrying about stuff that hasn't happened yet and may never actually happen. So if it does actually happen, I'll deal with it then. But I try not to waste too many brain cycles on hypotheticals.
I think that's great. I mean, live in the now and focus on that and make that fantastic. And it also, I think that requires a bit of security in your own ability to fix, which I think is, but I think that's a skill that everyone should strive to have. That's a very, very important one. I would say that's actually.
I can take that a step further and say, I think everyone's ability to, you know, deal with those things when they happen is probably better than they're giving themselves credit for, right?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I would argue that it is one of the most important parts of maturity is to be able to say that about yourself as well. So for you to say that, and not only that, like establish that you have that, but to call it even a mantra, I think it speaks a lot about you, Ray, which is a very good thing. So I love that. That's a great answer. And it's not a problem unless it's a problem. That's a good one to add to the list. But Ray Murphy, thank you so much for being here today. By the way, with a name like Ray Murphy, of course you became a Red Sox fan. I don't know how I didn't make that joke before.
You got it in under the wire, so it's still
got it in there. You know, that's it. When we write, you don't know when we make the jokes. It's just there at publication. But anyway, Ray, is there anything else that you want to talk about and plug, of course, before we sign off today?
That's about it. This was super enjoyable, Nick. I'm glad we finally connected.
We did it.
And I can't wait to see you in person November 2nd in Arizona.
Oh, it's going to be super fun. But yeah, guys, thank you all so much for tuning in for Nick Pollock and Friends. I'm hoping to do more of these regularly, but make sure you subscribe, of course, to the channel so you don't miss any of them. But that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock, and that was my friend, Ray Murphy.